Please note that this podcast contains information regarding sensitive events, including domestic violence, assault, and abuse, as well as other triggering events, such as murder. This podcast is intended for mature audiences. When Alice jumped down the rabbit hole, she immediately regretted her decision. A rabbit hole is a metaphor for something that transports someone into a troubling, surreal state or situation. Welcome to Afterglow, the unveiling of the Idaho cult, season 2. This podcast will take you down the deepest of rabbit holes as it unfolds. The story is so compelling, so bizarre, and so heinous, it's impossible to look the other way. Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were dedicated in the most horrible way to an ideology that should only be fiction. Instead, their ideology put them behind bars. Join us as we explore the lives, lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. I'm your host, Kathy Brooks. Please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Afterglow, Unveiling the Idaho Cult. Today is Season 2, Episode 12, Loin Fire. You will get the gist of that cringeworthy phrase at some point later on in the show. We're going to continue with the timeline here. At the last episode, Alex Cox fell over and died in Zalema's house, on Zalema's floor, with Zalema's son, Joseph, attempting to save his life by calling 911. The day after Tammy Daybell's body had been exhumed. As we move forward, the autopsy report comes back a few days later, and according to Nathan Moffitt, Alex died of natural causes. He says blood clots. Then he goes on to say he was assuming a pulmonary embolism. I'm not sure how this is worded in the actual factual medical examiner's report, but I think it would be a little more detailed than that, and I think they would use more medical terminology than blood clots. I'm a little curious about that autopsy report. I have not come across it, but I would like to read it if I could find it. All right, as we move on, if you're new here and you have not listened to the other episodes, this is a story being told from beginning to end about the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell case. The murder of Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow, Tammy Daybell and Charles Vallow. It's an intricate story with so many rabbit holes. It's best to go back to the beginning if you're not familiar with the story. But today's episode, we will continue from December of 2019, and you will understand why I call this Loin Fire in a minute. Now, at this point, the FBI is involved. The news media is starting to report a lot about this. People are beginning to take notice. People that knew Chad and Lori are beginning to move back into the cracks of nowhere land, zip their mouths, and watch what's happening. But the investigators and the Woodcocks are determined to find JJ Vallow and Tylee Ryan. Here is a Fox 13 Salt Lake news report talking about what's happening at this moment in our timeline. This was released December 20th, 2019.
The FBI and police across the country are looking for two missing children from Idaho who might be in extreme danger. 6-year-old Joshua Vallow and 17-year-old Tylee Ryan have been missing since September. Fox 13's Adam Herbetz is live in studio with an update on the search for these two and their parents. Adam.
Kirsten, this is Lori Vallow, the children's mother, and this is the man police believe she's with, Chad Daybell. Both of them had their spouses suspiciously die within the last 6 months. They quickly married each other, and now police believe they are both on the run.
This was supposed to be Tammy Daybell's final resting place in Springville, Utah, miles away from Idaho, where she lived with her husband, Chad Daybell. When she died at the age of 49, doctors said it was from natural causes, but now investigators have exhumed her body and consider the death suspicious.
We haven't been able to make contact with him for the last couple of weeks.
Now Chad is also away from home. He remarried quickly, and this is the new bride, Lori Vallow, another recent widow. Her husband was shot and killed by her brother last July in Arizona, he says, in self-defense. But now the brother is also dead. The newlyweds are missing, and her children have been missing since September.
We've gotten pretty much the runaround. I'm not for sure about the last time anybody saw Chad or Lori. The last time anybody had seen the kids were somewhere around the 23rd or 24th of September.
Police in Rexburg, Idaho say while different agencies investigate the death of each spouse, their main concern is the children and finding the runaway couple who lied to officers about the kids' location for months.
We would even be good with a FaceTime video of the children to make us, you know, feel better that they are safe.
Investigators say they do not know if the kids or the family is in Arizona, Utah, Idaho, or any other state, but the two children may be in serious danger. If you have any information, please call the Rexburg Police Department. Reporting in studio, Adam Herbitz, Fox 13 News, Utah.
So things are getting real. The news media has a hold of this. Lori and Chad are completely off the radar somewhere, according to people that know them and the police. Rexburg Police, Chandler Police, Gilbert Police, the FBI are all involved. Alex Cox's truck is impounded from Zalema Pastinus' house. Things are getting real and people are starting to really be concerned that these children may be actually in terrible danger. Some people are speculating that they're tucked away somewhere because these are doomsday preppers and they're just preparing for the end of times and they're convinced that this is happening any minute and they put the children somewhere safe. Other people are starting to say, oh my God, these kids are dead. But most people were keeping hope alive at that point. Also on December 21st, 2019, the Kauai Police Department got involved. Kauai, Hawaii, the island of Kauai, my favorite island, I might add. Lori's too, apparently. They confirmed Lori and Chad were actually living on the island. Now, mainstream media didn't know this, but the police did. So according to Officer Tyler Yates in Kauai Police Department, he wrote an email titled, it was a response to an email titled, New Distro List and Case Update, Preparing a People / Church of the Firstborn, by Tyler Yates, is the officer. And he sent this to the FBI and to Nathan Moffitt at Chandler Police, Ryan Piller, all these FBI agents and law enforcement. This was all sent to. And it says, I read your email and the address associated with the, this is redacted, this was a typo on my part of the text I sent to Detective Nathan Moffitt. Goes on to say, on December 21st, 2019, at approximately 1400 hours, so 2 p.m., contact was made with the property manager at the above address, and the property manager stated that Chad and Lori are staying at the address. The property manager related that he saw Chad the morning of 12/21/2019. I have not observed the two yet at the residence, and I'm still trying to locate a vehicle. A video camera with live streaming was set up on the residence in one of our UC vehicles, and we have yet to observe the couple. Any further updates, and I'll be in contact with Detective Nathan Moffitt. Aloha, Officer Tyler Yates, Kauai Police Department, Investigator Vice / Narcotics Unit. So Kauai is well aware that they are on the island, and they think they're hiding from everyone, apparently. And everybody has eyes on them now. They need to find the children. People are getting desperate to find these children, and rightly so. 2 days later, Lori and Chad's attorney release a statement. This is the attorney of Rigby, Andrus and Rigby. He issues the statement on behalf of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. The following statement was released on the Daybell's behalf. Chad Daybell was a loving husband and has the support of his children in this matter. Lori Daybell is a devoted mother and resents assertions to the contrary. We look forward to addressing the allegations once they have moved beyond speculation and rumor. So they're denying this. They release a statement through their attorney and they're like, not us. No way. I am offended. Lori is offended that anyone would claim that she is anything except for a fantastic mother. On December 27th, Chad Daybell's friend Julie Rowe comes forward and does an interview regarding Chad and Tammy and what she knows. Now, side note, I don't like to give too much attention to Julie Rowe. I think she uses a lot of this for her own purposes. And I think she's just, in my opinion, just as wacky as Chad was. And I feel like Chad was trying to be like Julie Rowe with his visions and near-death experiences, etc. But listen to what she has to say right here. This is a news clip from Fox 13, Salt Lake City.
Rowe believes in energy and talking with angels. She says both she and Chad Daybell had a vision where angels told them Tammy would die.
He would never hurt a child. He's raised five beautiful, amazing kids that I love like my own. And he would never hurt Tammy.
Julie Rowe first met Chad Daybell in 2014. She says God brought them together to publish her book about a near-death experience she had back in 2004.
I've been in their home in Springville, Utah several times and in their house in Idaho dozens of times. He always had his arm around her or was holding her hand and often would have his hand on her leg.
There was a three-year period of time where Julie would visit Tammy and Chad in Rexburg once a month. Chad and Julie would often talk about a vision they both had years ago that Tammy was going to die. But then after her excommunication from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints earlier this year, and Julie says they distanced themselves from each other. 3 weeks before Tammy's death, Chad and Julie called each other.
And I did ask him, Chad, do you still see Tammy dying? And he said, yes, I do.
Tammy was in charge of the finances and covers for Chad's books. Julie says Chad wanted to get out of the business, but Tammy wanted to keep going.
He basically said to me, I'm ready to get out now, and Tammy doesn't want to yet. And he's like, once she passes, like I'm done. I can't keep doing this.
Now, Julie hasn't heard from Chad or any of his children. She's not reached out to Chad himself, and his daughter has not responded to her texts. Julie says she relies on her visions for comfort.
I do know the kids are safe. I can see them. I can see their energy. I can see that they're in a bright house. I can see the living room where they are. I can see they're in a nice, comfortable bed at night. I can tell you this. He did not hurt those kids. Those kids are alive.
Rexburg police say they have looked at the phone locations for Tylee, Lori, and Chad, but will not confirm or deny if any locations have been pinged. Along with the FBI, Rexburg police have asked multiple other agencies throughout the U.S. to join in on the investigation. In studio, Aaron Cox, Fox 13 News, Utah.
I don't even want to give my opinion on Julie Rowe because I don't like to make her relevant in this whole thing, but that's pretty crazy. That her and Chad were talking about Tammy dying, and then Chad doesn't want to be his author anymore. This is all going around on while he is, lured in by this Barbie doll, Lori. And he's luring her in with telling her she's the queen. She's the head of the 144,000. She is here to save the world or all the people that they choose. Anyway, now this is really bizarre. This came up. And you probably never heard of this unless you were following this case really closely from the beginning. But Kay and Larry sent the FBI a text. And in this text, this is December 30th, 2019. In this text, Lori Vallow and Alex Cox, apparently, according to Kay and Larry, were shipping meth and money laundering through Chad Daybell's business to raise money for their legal battle. This all came up through these social media posts, and it was on the Facebook groups, and people were like, what? They were calling it Methgate. But let me read that to you. It is to the FBI, Salt Lake City, from Larry and Kay Woodcock, regarding Joshua Vallow and Tylee Ryan disappearance. The date of this letter, email, was December 30th, 2019, and the source is Dan Judd. The message received this morning, it says, summary. Lori Vallow and Alex Cox were involved in a plan to raise money for an upcoming legal battle. They arranged a meth shipment from Arizona through Utah to Idaho. This detective thinks that the money went through Chad Daybell's publishing business, and it is possible that Tammy Douglas Daybell noticed the cash influx and traced the money. He believes that Tammy may have been killed with pure beta, P-U-R-B-E-T-A. In or about September, Alex and Lori, the detective says that a wet submerged fruit shipment of meth was sent from Arizona through Utah to Idaho, may be impacted at narcotic transshipment. A careful review of Alex Cox, Lori's central to well-shielded kingpin operation, he says, you should in particular note that a huge dismantle of meth shipments were specific to Idaho, Oregon at the same time near September. Lori's motives and actions were unclear, and that facts are sparse, and that thread of inquiry to my hand at this time. Sosa and Lori meet up with cash volumes that impacted estimates of the publishing house, the events that compromised the Alex Cox threat via transaction. Why Tammy Daybell might have followed cash follow inquiry, look at what finances the Arizona, Utah, Idaho Land and Transportation DEV and the Sosa.Lori link. Also check the huge legal fee via the Rexburg law firm. Hector Sosa Jr. was born in Puerto Rico. He began having visions of future events as a young boy, a gift he inherited from his mother. At the age of 13, he and his family joined the LDS Church. He began having visions and prophecies and doctrines taught. By church leaders, it states his foreseen visions were blah, 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 is what this says. It literally says blah, 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 as listed in the Bible. He lists all the people involved in AVAL, lists Michael, Nancy, James, Rod Meldrum, Christopher Parrott, Mike Stroud, Connie Kroschow, Eric Endres, Sean Littlebear, Stephen French, Jack Lyon, Jacob Fulmer, Lloyd Erickson, Richard Holbs, and Jonathan Neville. These people have aliases. Neville has a business partner who is a child rapist. Neville tried to hire Dan Judd as a headhunter. Feel free to call Dan Judd, 405, blah, blah, blah. There's a phone number. Don't understand at all. I believe nothing came of this, but this is what was going on. Everybody was scrambling. There was weird stuff being told and said. And they called this, Facebook was calling this Methgate. Like, it's really crazy. A lot of it makes no sense. It lists some people. They're starting to say this was like some drug trafficking thing going on. It's really bizarre. According to Annie Lennox, when I found this part on her timeline, it says, a family denied this was ever sent to the FBI, but later a family member confirmed sending this communication and said it was an attempt to get law enforcement to take the case seriously, even though they knew it wasn't true. So weird, right? All kinds of background noise and things, and how can you keep any of this straight? Because it's really, truly getting insane. Like, what? What? Now, before we get into the whole James and Elena loin fire, you have to understand about a document that was found in Lori's documents, Charles Lori's documents that were found. It's called Lily Connection Document, and it's titled James and Elena. Apparently, it says James and Elena had 7 children, 4 sons and 3 daughters. Just keep in mind the light and dark stuff. Remember, people are rated dark and light. And people they didn't like were rated dark. And people that they did like and believed them and trusted them and could manipulate them, they rated light. So according to this, James and Elena, Chad and Lori, had 7 children. This goes through the children, how they were rated, and when they existed. The first one is a male named Kenneth. He was a 5.1L. The second is a female named Melanie with an I, like Melanie Pawlowski, Melanie Boudreaux-Pawlowski, no E on the end. 3L. Next is a female named Jada, 4.3L. Then a male named Jace, 5.1L. And then it has in parentheses 316, like John 316. I don't know. It says tall high school quarterback. And then there's a female named Jenny, 4.3. And it says one of the dream girls. There's a male named Connor, 4.3L. And then it says a male named JJ Vallow, who is a 4.2 light. Goes on to say that Lori has these guardian angels. One is Emmeline B and will be replaced by Stacy soon. Stacy is Lori's deceased oldest sister. Then Laura, in parentheses Lolly. Lori's parents had a baby that died very young, and the name of the baby was Laura. And so this is number 2 here, Laura, parentheses Lolly. Then Novell, then Joyce, then Valerie, then Gail, then Match. Okay, so those are Lori's guardian angels, and 8 and 9 are blank. There's supposedly 9 guardian angels. Then it goes into Joshua, JJ Vallow, and it says JJ is a 4.2 light. And apparently these are his lives, I suppose. It says number 2 was 400 BC among the lost tribe of Manasseh in Northern Europe. Number 3, son of James and Elena. James and Elena, that's Chad and Lori. We've established that, as confusing as this all is. Then, apparently this is life 4.1, Jonathan Elliot Edwards from 1745 to 1801. And then 4.2 today. Meaning JJ is a 4.2 light today. And then it goes into Lori, 4.3 light. 2 says Lania, daughter of Methuselah, married Neil A. Maxwell. 3, Elena, daughter of Jesus' half-brother Judas, married James the Just. There's your James and Elena again. 4, Lamari, Prophet Moroni's wife. And 4.2, Mary French, wife of Robert Smith Jr. from 1626 to 1693. And today, she is a 4.3. So this is their rating as they move through their probations, I suppose, their multiple mortal probations as they evolved, as they became somebody else. But see how important she is? They literally have her as Elena, daughter of Jesus' half-brother Judas. So Jesus would be Lori's uncle? And then they go into their friends. And we are going to go into some deep dive with the interviews of these particular people. Nicole, Christina, Serena, and Melanie Gibb. Nicole, they give her some big, you know, who she is, who she was about. Her name is Nicole Earl. 2, she was the daughter of Lamech. 3, the daughter of Jesus' half-brother Judas, and she was the sister to Elena. So Nicole apparently was also the niece of Jesus and Elena's sister. Elena is Lori. I hope you're sticking with me here. It's very complicated. I mean, it's just bizarre. Also then, Nicole was a 4.1. She was a granddaughter of Martin Luther, and then a 4.2 LDS pioneer in Utah in the mid-1800s, and 4.3 today, or 2019. Then there's Christina Atwood. Again, we will have interviews with Christina Atwood that I am super excited to share with you, because there's a lot of information with these ladies. Two, Lania's daughter, granddaughter of Methuselah. Three, daughter of Nephite, prophet Jacob, around 530 BC. And 4.1, Mariah Smith, youngest daughter of Mary Smith, 1677 to 1738, and today. She's Christina Atwood today and rated a 4.2. Then there's Serena Sharp. Her first one, two, says Lania's daughter, granddaughter of Methuselah. Three, wife of Zebulun, Heber J. Grant. Don't know these people, haven't researched them. Three, that was wife of Zebulun, Heber J. Grant in parentheses. 4.1, lived during the life of Christ, sister of Elena. So Serena is also Elena's sister. 4.2, Jonathan Edwards' daughter, and 4.3 today, which would have been 2019. Then we got Melanie Gibb. Melanie Gibb, two, it says daughter of Dan of 10 tribes. Three, Phoebe Smith, daughter of Robert and Mary Smith, 1661 to 1740 was when she lived. And 4.1, Julie S. Tutwiller, Alabama reformer and educator, 1841 to 1916. And 4.2 today. There's Jason Mao, who we'll have interviews with as well. Jason Mao is a former police officer from Phoenix and Chandler. He is an interesting character in all of this. Two, it says Israelite soldier at Battle of Jericho. Three, one of Helaman's stripling warriors. 4.1, Revolutionary War soldier from Massachusetts. And 4.2, today. Then there's Thor. Thor Furiseth. Two, Abinadab, older brother of King David. Three, son of Nephite, disciple, I'll spell it, K-U-M-E-N-O-H-I, lived in Americas at the time of Christ. 4.1, Pierpont Edwards, son of Jonathan Edwards. Apparently this is when he lived, 1750 to 1826. And 4.2, Brigham W. Kimball, son of Heber C. Kimball, 1845 to 1867. And 4.3 today. So that is all their multiple mortal probations. This is their people. This is their little tribe. This is their special people. Those people were told what their previous lives were, how they were rated, who they were related to, how special they were, because they were related to really important people like Jesus Christ. Then there's a seven missions document. Seven missions to accomplish together. One, translate ancient records. Two, write the book about the translation process. Three, identify locations in Northeast Arizona for white camps. Four, presidency of the Church of the Firstborn. And five, help establish the food distribution as the tribulations start and the delegate. Now, we went over that a little bit in the past. Here's some more. Six, ordain individuals to translation as the camps begin. Seven, provide supplies to righteous members of families. See, they were very busy at work. This is their assignment. Those are their people. They are going to lead 144,000 into the tribulations. That's just what I got from all this. Then there's something called the Seven Eras of Influence document. The 100 have served Heavenly Father throughout the history of the world, but they have worked as a group during the seven eras of influence. the city of Eknok and building Noah's Ark, the formation of the House of Israel, Abraham through Moses, the Nephite journey to America, during Jesus' ministry, both in Jerusalem and the Americas, the American Revolution and signing the Declaration of Independence, the restoration of the Church of Jesus Christ in the Northeast United States, and gathering to Southeast Idaho and Arizona, laying the foundation for Zion. Do you see that? This is how important they were through the entire history of the world. The city of Eknok, building Noah's Ark, the formation of the House of Israel, the Nephite journey to America. Some of this is LDS stuff, right? During Jesus' ministry, both in Jerusalem and the Americas, the American Revolution and signing the Declaration of Independence, the restoration of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the Northeast United States, and finally, what their mission is today, gathering to Southeast Idaho and Arizona, laying the foundation for Zion. Again, in this document, as a reminder, it goes on to their rating system. Current numbers on Earth at this time in each estate level. The estate levels are the light and dark. These totals represent light spirits and dark. They have equal numbers. So, not to read them all, but a level two, billions and billions of level twos, females and males, and they say most LDS people are level twos. Then it goes into the level threes. There's only 700,000 males, but there's 2.3 million females that are level three. Goes on to the fours, 4.1, 4.2, 4.3. Goes from 70,000 in the male down to 700. By you get time, you get to 4.3. In the female, it goes from 130,000 down to 1,300 by the time you get to 4.3. Then it really drops off. Level 5.1, there's 133 males and only 4 females. The next level is 5.2, there's 71 males, 0 females. 5.3 has nobody. Zip, zero, nobody. No females, no males. And the 6, which is apparently the top, it has 5 males and 2 females. So it goes on to say that most LDS members are level 2. Remember, you can be light and dark of any of these levels, and they all match. Most bishops and ward leaders are level 3. Most stake presidents and general authorities are level 4. Most apostles are level 5. A few are level 6. The dark side can only match the light numbers, not exceed them. That is why there are few fives on earth right now. It limits the dark's power. Twos and threes are fluid. They can change sides during the earthly life. And 4.1 and above have made covenants to their side, and they rarely switch sides. So once you're a 4.1 or whatever, you're light or dark, you're kind of going to stay there is what I'm getting from this stuff. So then they go into Chad's rating of Lori's family and ex-husbands, Barry Cox, Lori's father, he gets a 3 light. Janice Cox, mother, 3 light. Stacy, her deceased sister, was a 3 light on Earth, but she's now a 4.1 light. Alex Cox is a 2 light. Adam Cox is a 3 light. Adam got a higher rating this time. I think that all changes in the future, right? Laura, which is the deceased baby that her parents had before Lori, her rating was a 3 light on Earth, and she has graduated to a 4.1 light in the afterworld. Lori, Lori, Lori. Lala, Elena, Lori, Lolo. Loco. Sorry, got a little carried away with the Lori thing there. 4.3 light. Summer Cox Shiflett, Lori's sister, is a 3 light. Her husband is a 2 light, but borderline too dark. Her first husband was a 2 light. We don't talk much about him. And clearly that guy, wherever he is, he's like got his head in the sand. He's hiding out. Like, I don't want to know these people. I don't want them to know I know them. I don't want them to know I didn't any. Never. Oh my God. I'm glad I'm alive. And I got rid of that wife years ago. Her second husband, William LaGoya, who is Colby's actual bio father. And you learned about him in season 1, where Lori was giving him a heck of a hard time to get Colby. William LaGoya is a 2 dark. Colby is a three light, but his wife, Kelsey, is a three dark. Joseph Ryan, Lori's third husband, is rated a 4.3 dark, and he is sealed away. So he can never change. He is gone forever. He is sealed into the eternity of bad people. Tylee Ryan, this is really scary here. This is where this really bothers me and everyone. Tylee Ryan is a 4.1 dark. And remember, they said once you're on the fours, you rarely can change sides. So they have labeled Tylee a 4.1 dark here. Charles Vallow, which is really bizarre, he gets a three light. His first wife gets a two dark. His son Cole gets a three dark. Zach, the other son, gets a three light. And JJ, Joshua Vallow, JJ, our little JJ, gets a 4.2 light. Melanie Boudreaux Pulowski, the niece of Lori, she gets a three light. And her husband, Brandon, who was shot at, remember, gets a three dark. They have four kids, it says. Both boys are three light. Older girl is a three light, and the younger girl is a 4.1 light. So Melanie's kids are all rated very well, but the husband is rated bad people, which all makes sense when you know who got shot at. It's pretty clear and obvious what these people were thinking and how they were rating people. I just want to say, the way I'm doing this in the timeline is for you to understand everything that was going on in Lori and Chad's head, what their plans were, what they were doing, while everyone else was worried about these children. And it makes more sense now to see that they were literally planning this, that they were labeling people dark, that these kids are missing. And they're like, poo-poo on you. I'm a good mother, you know, and they're off in paradise in Hawaii, laying on the beach. While they're following this information that they've created about who's dark and who's light. And it's pretty ominous that they've labeled Tylee such a dark spirit. Now that you know the whole rating thing and that they named themselves and they think they lived centuries and centuries and they were super duper important, related to Jesus Christ and in charge of everything and so magically important in this world, in all times of this world and history, based on their religious beliefs, there is some truth to the fact that this was about lust, money, greed, and selfishness. And this book that Chad wrote to Lori proves that in so many ways. You might want a barf bag for this. It's a little cringeworthy at times and a little explicit. So just beware of that. So this document was found in the FOIA documents, the big dump of documents that was put out there. And a lot of news reporters and stuff have grabbed them and posted them and published them. And this one is from the Chandler Police Department, and it goes into this James and Elena thing. It does start out that they were reading between the messages between Chad and Lori, and she had asked him to clear Melanie's niece's new house of any bad spirits. And Chad stated that he was working on the house, but he was trying to break down bad spirits that Brandon, her husband, the one that was shot at, had created. He also stated that he was able to detect three listening devices in her new house, and he directed Lori to where they were. So 2 days after Charles Vallow was shot and killed, this text message was sent by Chad Daybell to Lori Vallow at 10 p.m. at night, 2208. Quote, I am heading to bed so that I can come snuggle tightly against you. I adore you. You are truly my best friend on earth and throughout eternity. See you in a minute. Butterflies, kiss lips, fire. Emojis. Now, this was dated prior to Tammy's death, but 2 days after Charles Vallow had died. And then they noticed that Chad, in the police document here, they noticed that Chad started writing Lori a love story, a novel of sorts. It was sent in many text messages throughout the day. The story seemed to be romance novel of sorts about them, but the names were changed to James and Elena. In future text messages, Chad and Lori would refer to each other as James and Elena or Raphael and Lily. The following is the story that I observed between email and text messages. The text is just as it appeared in the messages and has not been corrected for grammatical errors. So here we go. Sit back, relax, and let's try to get through this cringy story together. Before I start reading this, if you do have any small ears around you, children or people that would feel this is inappropriate, this is Chad's love story to Lori, and it is a little risque and a little cringeworthy, like I said. And this ain't no Moulin Rouge. But if you do have smaller people, small ears, or people that you don't think would prefer to hear any of this, you might want to pause it or put on headphones. Here we go. Friday morning, October 26th, driving south on the freeway, a voice said, "You will meet an extraordinary woman today who will change your life forever." This was shocking, since such a thing seemed very unlikely at this conference. It is actually a very detailed story that began long ago on another world, and I will cover that part as I go along and the characters figure things out. But on the morning of October 26th, James arrived in St. George, still a bit baffled by the message he had received. He unloaded his books and set up his table, then joined the organizers for dinner in the main room. He saw his friend, MG, Melanie Gibb, I'm assuming, who had been so helpful to him when he spoke in Mesa that July. Melanie Gibb introduced James to her friend, Elena. When their hands touched, he felt a shock pass through him and his heart started beating fast. Elena was gorgeous and vivacious, and James was a little intimidated, yet honored that she would talk to him. He was happily surprised when she mentioned a key part of his novel, The Renewed Earth. No one had ever recognized the significance of that scene before. He had heard that voice before and seen that smile before. He felt they had even talked like this before. But who could be certain when? It was strange, but he could remember. The feelings were very strong, as if they had known each other, oh, so long. They didn't get many chances to talk after that because he had to help voice a woman's blue Muppet. But he watched her every chance he could. He had to stay at a relative's house that night, but he hardly slept. He kept envisioning himself with Elena in very wonderful situations that indicated they had been more than just friends. James was the first speaker on Saturday morning and knew exactly where Elena was sitting. He made sure to mention the scene from his book that they had discussed the previous evening. He was completely smitten by her and was even nervous of what she would think of his talk as he spoke. But when he would glance at her, she was always attentive and watching him, unlike the rest of the crowd. After his talk, he went to his book table. His talk had gone well, and there was a good group gathered around to buy books. His heart nearly leaped out of his chest when Elena joined him and helped sell the books. She was so beautiful that he could hardly concentrate on the customers. She straightened the books and gave the books great reviews, although she made him laugh a lot when she kept pushing the youth and fifth volumes of his first series. He could only giggle when people asked if she was his wife because, yes, in fact, she was. She just didn't know it yet. James was definitely having amorous feelings toward Elena as they sold books together. He had not felt this happy in his entire life. He was quite sure this was the woman the voice had told him about. James was ecstatic because he had already fallen deeply in love with her. Or better said, he remembered how much he had already loved her. Her eyes had mesmerized him from the moment they met. But once the book sales slowed down, she stood near him behind the table. They looked deeply into each other's eyes for the first time. And he knew he was in the presence of a goddess. He resisted an impulse to kiss her, but his entire body was on fire. He instinctively knew she was everything he had ever dreamed of. I must clarify that James is a very difficult person to get information from. He has been blessed with great knowledge, but 99% of the people he knows do not realize that. He is very guarded, and it is a great task to gain his trust. But as Elena leaned forward to him and asked a couple of very insightful questions, he knew she was one of the very few people on earth he could trust. James' spirit was so excited at this revelation that he shattered a thick veil that had been placed between these two souls during their mortal lives. The thick veil had been placed because of the unique, unparalleled love James and Elena had shared in previous lifetimes. That veil had prevented them from finding each other until this appointed day that would be remembered throughout the heavens as the true beginning of a spectacular mission that would save millions of souls and defeat the forces of darkness. James' physical attraction to Elena was almost overwhelming, but he was equally drawn to the spiritual energy that was radiating from her. As they talked, it was confirmed to him that they had indeed been married before and were eternal companions. He had glimpses of them walking dusty paths together, and he realized they had been married during the life of Jesus Christ, and they had been very close to him. At this time, their spirits could not be restrained any longer, and a long-awaited makeout session took place in that lobby. This was manifest in the mortal world to James and Elena through the scientific phenomenon known as loin fire. As they talked, James had burning desire to make love to her, but he wasn't sure she had felt the same way. But they could not stay away from each other. One time, she was sitting on a couch near his table, and he took a seat on the chair about 5 feet from her. She began to squirm and covered her body with her hands. She asked him, "What are you doing?" He wasn't aware of what she meant. All he knew was that if Bruce Poyter hadn't been giving them an evil eye, a child would have been conceived on that couch. The erotic tension continued throughout the afternoon. James could only think of her. His desire for her was indescribable. Thankfully, she had worn 16 layers of clothing to survive the 8-degree weather, so he was not fully aware that she truly had the body of a goddess. Her dimensions were exactly what he had always fantasized about, but that revelation would have to wait a month. As the night concluded, James needed to take his empty boxes to his car. With Elena's help, he had sold more books at a show than he'd ever had before. She helped him carry the boxes to the car, and then he could not resist the desire to hug her. He made an awkward attempt that was way too brief because their friends were bringing more boxes. In that short embrace, though, he knew he had found the woman he had searched for his entire life. It was made crystal clear to him that they had been married before and would be again. He once again had to fight off the powerful urge to kiss her and somehow disguise the massive erection he was experiencing. They returned to the building and helped carry tables to the second floor while she sat on the couch. They couldn't take their eyes off each other. He was already madly in love. Her group of friends finally had to leave. He was devastated, unsure how he would ever contact her again. Then her spirit took over and asked him, "Can I get your cell number in case I have some questions?" They exchanged numbers, and they gave each other a hug goodbye. It was the most wonderful, electric, delicious hug he had ever felt. Then he watched her walk away, knowing she was truly going to change his life forever. End of chapter one. I am not even commenting. That's all I'm going to say. Chapter two. James sadly walked to his car after watching Elena disappear down the hallway, but he couldn't deny their connection and his absolute attraction to her. She still seemed way out of his league, but he nervously sent her a text before driving to his hotel. A minute passed, then two, without a response. He kicked himself for thinking he ever had a chance with her. Then his phone buzzed. Elena had texted back. His heart soared, and over the next few hours, they texted back and forth dozens of times. He knew she was staying at a home in Torkoville. He desperately wanted to drive there and whisk her back to the hotel for a night of reconnection and romance. He twice got redressed during the night to go see her, but the spirit gently said, "Have patience. Everything will work out as it's supposed to." They finally stopped texting around 4 a.m., and when he closed his eyes to sleep, he was taken again to their previous life together. The intense passion of their lovemaking was as sight to behold. He knew it would be difficult, but he could be patient if it meant he could experience that type of love just once in his life. As he lay in the hotel bed, it was as if her spirit had joined him. They wrapped around each other, kissed gently, and the emotions they shared were not of this world. James woke up in the hotel room feeling happier than he had in his entire life. It felt like he and Elena had fit together perfectly in every way. He rolled over to kiss her, but then reality struck. She was actually more than 20 miles away in Tocqueville with her Arizona friends. He texted her and she quickly responded. He deeply regretted not going to be with her the night before. It was as if he already knew the taste of her lips and his hands knew every curve of her body. He knows his dreams were somewhat real and that they were actually traveling to each other on a higher dimension. He hungered for her in ways that he didn't think were possible. The voice was right. Elena was going to change his life forever. He packed his suitcase and began driving north on the freeway. As each mile passed, James could feel Elena's spirit beckoning for him to join her. As he approached the Tocqueville exit, it took every ounce of willpower to keep driving on the freeway. His attraction to her was beyond magnetic. He felt their souls were two halves of an eternal union. Tears filled his eyes as he passed the freeway exit. He desperately yearned to embrace her and tell her he deeply loved her, as crazy as that sounded. But he knew he would be seeing her 3 weeks later at a conference in Arizona. It seemed like an eternity away, but he sensed it would be a very significant weekend for them. He already was crazy about her, and his feelings of admiration and affection for her would only grow more intense and wonderful. During his long drive home, James was able to text back and forth with Elena, and it was clear they were extremely compatible and shared the same interests. It felt like talking to a long-distance best friend. When he arrived home, he searched the internet for anything about her, but there was nothing. She was a fascinating mystery that he wanted to spend the rest of eternity with. At the end of his drive, she suggested that they talk on the phone the next day. He was thrilled at the thought of hearing her voice again. He was falling more madly in love by the minute. When James heard her voice that Monday morning, the euphoria he had felt Saturday came rushing back strongly. They talked for 2 hours, but it seemed to be only minutes. He was obsessed with her and couldn't get enough. During that first phone conversation with Elena, James realized she already had a strong understanding of many of the truths he had been taught regarding how the universe really worked. The loin fire and obsession with each other had no real explanation unless they truly had a spiritual connection before this life. He was able to clarify many of the promptings and impressions she had felt in recent years. She knew she had lived on this earth before, and James was able to clarify when. They had been married before on this earth and many times on a previous earth. Their love truly spanned the universe and eons of time. They knew the Lord had brought them together again for a crucial mission that only they could accomplish as a united couple. During the next week, they spoke every day for at least an hour, but often longer. They hungered to know everything about each other. This was a new experience for James to open up and share true feelings of his heart. But he knew he could trust her completely. The bond between them was intense, and only the vast distance between them kept their passion for each other from roaming into a blazing inferno. She quickly became his best friend, or better said, two best friends had reunited, and their prior love was now ignited again in a wonderful heavenly way. As November began, James and Elena had talked on the phone every day since last seeing each other. He was extremely impressed with her intelligence, personality, and subtle humor that made him laugh more than he had in his lifetime. She was a complete delight to talk to, and the highlight of his day was when he could hear her magical voice. It was so familiar to him, and it actually healed and soothed his heart and soul. They would both attend the same event in mid-November, and it seemed like that day would never arrive. Each day they opened their hearts to each other a little more. James knew he could trust her with the mysteries of the universe that had been revealed to him. He knew they had been married before, and they had been close friends with the Savior when he lived in Jerusalem. James has served in an important position in the Lord's church, and Elena had been his beloved spouse and best friend. That relationship was now meant to continue in this lifetime. In Jerusalem, James and Elena had enjoyed tremendous intimacy. Their physical desire for each other was unmatched. And they were fortunate that they could be alone morning, noon, and night. And they seized every chance to passionately express their love to each other. They simply could never get enough, even after many years of marriage. Everyone knew they were crazy about each other, and they were a wonderful example of how spouses should cleave together in love and unity. James had visions of how they would happily and joyfully pleasure each other in this office. They had two favorite positions that particularly bonded them together. Nothing meant more to James than holding Elena in his arms and unifying their bodies in perfect synchronization. As James and Elena talked on the phone, he tried to delicately describe their connection to each other, as he was delighted that she believed him. He also shared that they had been married other times on a previous world, and she accepted that information as well. James was overjoyed to have these memories restored to him because he truly loved her with all of his heart. He knew they were meant to be married again and complete important missions together before the second coming. He was ecstatic that she was receiving confirmation of these things as well. As they talked on the phone, the spiritual connection was so intense that it also produced physical desires, and it was as if their spirits were making love despite the great distance between them. James knew his spirit was visiting her during these conversations. He also became aware that his spirit would visit her at night, and they would wrap around each other in a sensual embrace, kissing her was so wonderful and real. And he knew that the next time they saw each other, he needed to kiss her. He wouldn't be able to resist holding her. He was absolutely in love with her in every way. By the time the conference arrived, James and Elena had become very close through their phone conversations, but he desperately needed to see her again. She agreed to pick him up at the airport and take him to his hotel. He was extremely nervous, worried that the spark they had felt earlier might not be there. But as she arrived at the airport and he opened the car door, his heart nearly burst at the sight of her smile. She was stunningly gorgeous. And as they gripped each other's hands, the electricity was tangible. The love between them was powerful and real. The hotel was only a short distance away, and he invited her into his room. They were soon standing alone in the room, and he put his arms around her and looked into her gorgeous blue eyes. They hungered for each other, and he leaned forward and fulfilled a promise he had made to her a few days earlier. He gently kissed her tender lips, and the same heavenly electricity filled his entire body. The passionate magic they had felt many centuries earlier came surging back powerfully. James moved to the couch, and Elena straddled him effortlessly, as if they had done this thousands of times before. She fit perfectly on him, and they pressed their loins tightly against each other. The feeling was exquisite, and they both smiled and moaned at the sensations passing between them. They were still fully clothed, but the intensity of the intimacy was undeniable. James felt the powerful desire to bless Elena at that time. As they stayed in that favorite position, he moved his hands to her head and began to cleanse and purify each part of her body. He could feel the pains and troubles she had endured throughout her life being removed from her soul and being taken outside and destroyed. James' hands worked their way down her body and lingered briefly on her beautiful breasts. She truly had the body of a goddess, and he was experiencing an indescribable mix of physical and spiritual ecstasy. He soon concluded the cleansing of her body from head to toe, then filled her body with a balm of light and love. James could see the happiness in her eyes, and instinctively their mouths came together again. The fire was burning strongly within them both, and as their kissing grew more intense, he gently said, "I love you, Elena." These words sparked a frenzy within them. Their tongues effortlessly entwined, and their hips gyrated in a smooth, erotic rhythm. Two lovers, long separated, were finally united in heavenly bliss. After a few minutes of excitement, pleasure, and fun on the couch, James and Elena both felt compelled to change into more comfortable clothing. James, out in some athletic shorts and a blue shirt, and Elena put on a stunning black top and tight leggings. The top revealed just enough, but not too much, and James was overjoyed at the sight. James took her in his arms, and they smiled at each other. The vibration in the room was intense, and their hearts reached out to each other in glorious reunion. James gently touched the sides of Elena's breasts, and he was in ecstasy. She stood on her tiptoes and gave him a sensual kiss that sent electricity throughout his body. They moved towards the bed and were quickly entwined around each other. She was so beautiful, loving, and enchanting that James could hardly breathe. They were both aroused, but knew there were limitations on what could occur that night. But they kissed for nearly an hour and pressed against each other tightly. Toward the end of the evening, Elena laid on her stomach at the end of the bed, and James caressed her fabulous body. He grasped her perfect bottom with both hands, and she expressed how much she loved that. She soon sat up and straddled him again as they passionately kissed farewell. They knew they would see each other again in the morning, but the separation seemed too long. But they knew that the long wait to find their eternal match had come to an end, and James was overjoyed beyond description. James and Elena had agreed to visit the temple the following morning. She returned to the hotel room, and after additional romance on the couch, they calmed their nerves enough to give each other a blessing. As James placed his hands on her head, he connected with Elena's true eternal self. He knew he was in the presence of an exalted goddess who had returned to Earth to perform a special mission. This mission included being with him, and they would progress together as translated beings. The full plan wasn't yet completely clear to him, but the immense power radiating from her confirmed his belief that she was among the greatest women in the universe. She then gave him a tremendous blessing that helped him realize how much she truly loved him and wanted to be with him forever. He was deeply humbled that such an incredible woman regarded him so highly. His heart burned as she blessed him, and he had glimpses come to his mind of not only their life in Jerusalem, but even as a couple on a previous earth. He knew they had been eternal companions for eons, and that their love was beyond celestial. They embraced following the blessings, and the emotions they felt were a mixture of eternal bliss and celestial desire. The sexual chemistry was undeniable, but the spiritual unity was a glorious bonus for them both. They had only known each other for 3 weeks, but two lonely, misunderstood souls had finally found their best friend that they could trust and confide in. They arrived at the temple, and they both felt they should do sealings together. They were soon seated in a sealing room, facing each other. Elena looked so stunning as she smiled at him. She seemed calm, while he felt quite nervous. Their opportunity soon came to kneel across the altar from each other, And as the sealer pronounced those sacred words, James and Elena knew they were now sealed as husband and wife for eternity. As the earthly sealing was taking place, a similar scene involving their spirits was happening on a higher plane, where they kissed and unified their souls. They knew they had just begun a new journey together and was eternal and never ending. After the sealing, they went to lunch together, and they felt so comfortable together. Everything felt so right. James could look into her eyes forever unless he was gently kissing her and telling her how much he loved her. Even when they held hands, there was a powerful vibration that exceeded the celestial world. They attended the conference, but their thoughts were completely focused on each other. James gave a talk that was well received and sparked great interest in his books. Elena joined him at the selling table, and they sold more than 359 books within a couple of hours. But all they really wanted was to slip away and express their love to each other. They went to dinner with some friends, but afterward they were able to find some time alone. They drove to a secluded area and slipped into the back seat. Elena was wearing a pair of incredibly sexy jeans. And as she straddled James in the back seat, he once again grasped her fantastic bottom. She pushed him back into a reclining position, and their loins fit perfectly together. They kissed passionately and rhythmically, pulsated against each other. Their love was intense and undeniably real. James was now madly, crazily in love with her, and it was so wonderful to know she felt the same way about him. One powerful moment happened earlier that day when Elena was listening to another speaker while James stayed at the table, but he thought he heard Elena say, "Come stand behind me." He went into the room and saw her standing against a wall. He moved behind her, and they discreetly touched. After a few minutes, he checked his phone and saw she had texted him that very sentence at the same time he heard her voice. It was a wonderful testament that they were already communicating with each other on a higher level. They helped clean up the conference, and Elena graciously allowed James to stay in a spare bedroom at her home that night. They visited with other friends until after midnight, then they all went to bed. James anxiously hoped Elena would join him in the spare room. It took a while for everyone to settle into their beds, but once the house quieted down, James opened his door slightly and saw the wondrous sight of Elena approaching the room. They locked the door behind her and quickly got under the covers. He was wearing his athletic shorts, and she was wearing tight, thin leggings and a loose top. They clung to each other and kissed desperately, hungrily. James placed his hands under her top and caressed her splendid breasts. She moaned happily and wrapped her legs around his waist. Only two thin layers of material separated their loins, and they could feel each other's most intimate body parts in detail. The intensity and spiritual vibration exceeded anything either one of them had ever felt before. They knew their spirits were actually intimately joined together, and it felt like they had left the celestial world. Elena soon got on top of James, and the rhythmic ecstasy continued for several more minutes. Towards the end, they both removed their tops, and they pressed their bodies together, skin on skin. They fit together perfectly, and their kisses were deep and frenzied. Their desire for each other was beyond compare. As a reunion in the spare room came to a conclusion, Raphael knew Elena was his perfect match. They longed to stay entwined together, but it would be best to separate and get some rest. But by 6 a.m., James could not stand to be away from her any longer. He slipped into her bedroom and stood at her bedside. She was unbelievably gorgeous, and he gently desired to join her in the bed and continue the previous night's activities. But there were other guests in the house who weren't yet aware of their sizzling love for each other. So he gently touched her shoulder to awaken her. Her eyes opened, and then she reached up and grabbed his arms to pull him into the bed. He smiled, realizing she wasn't fully awake and had likely been dreaming of him. He simply whispered that he loved her and hoped she would go walking with him through the neighborhood. James and Elena had enjoyed a walk together in the previous morning along the quiet streets of her gated community. The sensual attraction between them had been intense, and they had touched shoulders and held hands as they walked. They were like magnets that couldn't be separated. She had worn exercise leggings that drove him crazy with desire. The leggings emphasized her perfectly sculpted bottom, and it took all of his willpower not to pull her towards him, grasp that bottom firmly and powerfully with both hands while kissing her passionately. They went walking again that next morning. Unfortunately, a friend invited herself along, but James and Elena were still completely engrossed in each other. He had to catch a flight home later that morning, but he was able to give Elena a special blessing before departing. As he placed his hands on her head, he felt their spirits connect with a surge of power. At that moment, his only desire in life was to be with her, as always throughout eternity, and that desire has continued to intensify. During the blessing, he was shown the great missions they would perform together. He knew this was an eternal union that would forever change the world. Tears filled his eyes to be in the presence of this holy goddess, and he was nearly overcome by the spirit as he sensed her true place in the universe as a majestic archangel. End of story. That was all an accounting of them going to those conferences, the Preparing a People conferences, of them coming back to stay at Lori's house. All of that has been proven. So this is his way of putting his little romantic story into the real timeline. The officer that had found this and posted this in the FOIA documents says, continuing investigation. In reading the story, the dates mentioned in the story in general were consistent with how Lori and Chad met and started their new relationship. In a follow-up message from Lori to Chad, she indicated that she loved their story. Continuing to review records, I observed numerous text messages between Lori and Chad in which they were fighting off the evil spirits that were attaching themselves to others. Chad would often score people for Lori and talk about their propensity for being influenced by intruders. The following is a sample of this rationale as observed on July 22nd, 2019 and July 23rd, 2019. And it says, Chad, there are only 272 threes left and none of them have occupied a body before. They are down to their last reserves. I'm glad I caught Elroy. I feel he was aiming to hide out and then get in to JJ. What do you think about that? I'm going to read that again. Chad said, there are only 272 threes left, and none of them have occupied a body before. They are down to their last reserves. I'm glad I caught Elroy. I feel he was aiming to hide out and then get in to JJ. Oftentimes, people have tried to correct me in this whole story and said that JJ was not a zombie, but this clearly is the setup right here for Chad convincing Lori that an evil spirit turned JJ dark. We're going to end right there. I will be back as soon as possible. There's so much more to talk about. There's so much more that you maybe don't even know, but we will get to it all. Stay safe. Stay well. Thank you for listening to Afterglow, Unveiling the Idaho Cult. My name is Kathy Brooks. Please share this podcast if you're enjoying it and give me 5 stars with a nice review if you are so inclined. Stay safe. Stay well. Bye-bye. Sources for this episode, Fox 13, Salt Lake City, Fox 10, Justin Lum, East Idaho News, Nate Eaton, and Annie Cushing, Annie Lennox. Theme music by Dan Lebowitz.